And so ends another wonderful big band show with Mike. And we want to thank him very much for another entertaining 3 hours of big band music here at WHFR Dearborn from Henry Ford Community College, the station making waves. And what follows next for the next hour is our public affairs show, the new WHFR Journal. Welcome to another edition of the new WHFR Journal. Today is Friday, November 6, 2009. For those people listening on the podcast, don't blame us for anything that happens after November 6, 2009, not till next week anyway. We're covering, of course, this week here in Dearborn and the surrounding area, the elections that just happened last Tuesday. And I'm going to begin. I will introduce now, though, my colleagues in the studio, my co-host for today, Dennis Reimars, who is our WHFR News Director, and Amy Powers, who is one of our news reporters. Welcome to the studio today. Dennis, this is your mic check time, so talk to me about, you went to vote, I assume.
I did. I voted.
Lives in Dearborn, so he voted. That's good. You're one of the few and the proud.
I got a little sticker.
Uh-huh. And Amy, let me find your microphone. What about voting for you? Did you have fun on Tuesday?
I voted, and I also got a sticker.
Yeah, I didn't get a sticker. I don't understand.
I don't think you voted. Everybody gets a sticker.
Yeah. Gee whiz, I voted. I talked it up. I made jokes. I really entertained the people, the volunteers there. So, so they remember me, that's for sure.
Because you were the only one there?
I was the only one there, and I was acting stupidly. But in any event, the bad news is, and I got this printed from the city of Dearborn as unofficial results from last Wednesday morning about the vote total. It might have become official now. It seems good. But even Dennis and I were looking at this. It says that a total of registered voters in Dearborn is 56,300 some, almost 60,000 people. Now, you have to be an adult to register to vote, of course. We know that. And in Dearborn, I thought the last census said we had dipped below, including all kids who were not registered, teenagers too, 100,000. So how is it possible that you say, well, we could have 40,000 kids and 60,000 adults? That seems right. But I thought an awful lot of adults in Dearborn, like everywhere, are not even registered. As much as a third or more in any area are not even registered to vote. Now, if we really have this many registered, that's a wonderful thing. I wonder how many of them, though, have actually, they're registered, but they don't even live here anymore. You know, that they're on the voter rolls, but they've moved. You know, a lot of people have moved out of Detroit area, out of Dearborn, loss of jobs, all kinds of reasons. A lot of people move anyway. I wonder how many of those are really valid numbers for registered voters. But let's say, let's believe the city of Dearborn, that 59,300 some are the registered voters in Dearborn. Ballots cast were only 17,173. That means, if the registered voters number is accurate, that 42,178 people in Dearborn didn't vote.
Yeah, it's unconscionable. I think even the registering should be tied into other benefits. Getting your license, everyone should be out there voting. There's no reason not to, especially with absentee voting.
Yeah, we've got to get we've got to get definitely these people registered, and in addition, of course, get them to the polls. Now, of course, a lot of apathy, government's too big, or government's all corrupt, or government never listens, blah, blah, blah. There's some of these phrases, some of these concepts floating around society. And of course, if people don't vote, and then if they don't give feedback to their elected representatives in between, like working for their candidate actually, in a campaign, supporting the candidate, giving people ideas along the way, you know, then democracy can't happen anyway. So, you know, to say these things that are, you know, our government's corrupt or they don't listen anyway or they do what they want after they get in, it doesn't have to be that way if people will participate in the process as it was set up in our Constitution. Democracy is a great idea, if we ever really continue to try it. And with 42,000 registered adults in Dearborn not voting, we didn't try it. This is not an example of democracy. This is the few of the smart, the mobile, the connected, people that already have friends in office. These are the people that voted, I'm sorry to say, as well as some dutiful citizens who don't have any self-interest other than wanting to keep our democracy alive. But any one of these races we're going to mention in Dearborn and Dearborn Heights could have been totally different outcome.
Absolutely.
With even another 10,000 there. With even another 10,000. I just lost Dennis's mic.
Oh, really?
Are you there, Dennis?
Okay,
I turned off.
I know I'm here.
Yes, that's the spirit. Well, they can't see you out there, and they can't. You know,
this waving I'm doing is pointless.
Yeah. Yeah,
okay,
except for me.
A couple thousand would have made a difference in a lot of these races.
Exactly, yeah, but 42,000 didn't vote. And yeah, and some of those people, I've heard a few people who didn't vote say, well, I didn't know anything about the people. I didn't. Well, whose fault is that? But that means then you are going to be a victim of the system because you're stuck with whoever other people get elected, you know, so you can't feel part of the process, much less part of the solution, unless you do that. Now, let me just say, Dennis has a comment, but let me just say that the voter percentage in Dearborn was almost 29%. Now, nowhere did anybody predict more than 15 to 30% people at the polls because it was not an election year for governor. It was not an election year, you know, every 2 years to elect people to Congress in Washington. And sometimes senators, and somebody wanted to come in our station to deliver mail, and they pushed the wrong button. Oh, well. So in a way, the city of Dearborn did pretty good. I don't know about the percentages in other areas, but they predicted as low as 15% because it wasn't a presidential election, a congressional election, or election for governor, and therefore it was just local stuff. For us, anyway. Now, in some states, there was a governor's race, which was reported, Virginia, and where was the other big to-do? Yeah.
Virginia and...
Well, it was places where Republicans won.
Yes.
Okay. And, yes, there was an upstate Republican congressional race, too, upstate congressional race that was won by, I think, a Republican. But whatever it was, a couple of governor races, but not here in Michigan. And so, but, you know, as we say on this show, what matters to you most, or what should matter to you most, is right next door. You know, in fact, all the Republican pundits on certain TV news channels had, you know, large part said, well, this whole election across the whole country was a refutation of Barack Obama and his policies. And, you know, but it's mostly local races. On Jon Stewart and The Daily Show, they actually went back into the George W. Bush era. These same pundits in the mid-year, non-major election time said, well, you can't trust these results. It's all local. It means nothing in terms of George W. Bush, our president. The fact that he lost, Republicans that he supported, it means nothing. All these off-year elections, it's all just about local issues. You can't generalize anything about the president. Well, these same people now are saying, oh, it's all about the president.
Sure, it's a mandate.
So remember, John B. O'Reilly Jr. was elected as a mandate for Barack Obama, I guess. I don't know, or not. What do you say? I mean, this is no connection. You can't make a connection to these local races and Barack Obama. First of all, he didn't take sides in the mayoral race or the consul side. And president wouldn't anyway. But in those couple of governor races, yes, he did campaign. Oh, it was
New Jersey.
New Jersey, Corzine.
Yeah.
Yeah, who didn't win, that he actually campaigned there. I don't know if he actually visited Virginia or not, or wherever that other state was.
I think he dropped that off early because it looked fairly unwinnable.
Like, wasn't
going to
win anyway, yeah. So, I mean, it's worth a try, but it's, you know, can't believe these pundits, including us. It's so easy, first of all, to say things after the fact and sound intelligent because you know who won already, right? And then anything you say, oh, yeah, well, they knew and that's true and it follows the pattern that they're aware of. And no, we're just making this stuff up, folks, after the fact to fit our preconceived notions. That's what every political scientist does. When I took political science in college, in the first class, they said, understand that political science is not science. It's almost impossible to predict what's going to happen and why before the fact. But political scientists have a big job after the fact trying to explain it all. Well, and then they go back and find facts to fit the results. Now, that's anybody who's an academic in political science will admit this, maybe in a weaker moment, but that's true, that political science is not a real science. Yeah, it's a social science in general, but you can't really explain human behavior and human results until after the numbers are in. And it always looks like you're intelligent because you explain. And then you can, sure, you can try to predict the future. Nostradamus, Casey, Sylvia Brown, they predict the future, and they're right like one time in 10 million if they're general enough. We just can't do those things reliably. But here we go. Dennis has a point.
Well, it's just in line with what you're saying. We had 6 out of 7 of the council challengers on the show. Mm-hmm. We had a chance to talk to them for 30 minutes, which is more than maybe most people had in some of the debates that were around town. Mm-hmm. But the fact is that I left, or they when they left, I had certain impressions about each challenger. And yet, as we'll talk about, and I'm sure in just a few minutes, only one challenger is now a council member out of the people that we met. Yeah. The other thing I was going to ask you, both of you, I'll throw this out there. You said that when somebody doesn't vote and you bring it, you know, it's been brought to your attention, a lot of times they say, well, I didn't know enough to vote. I couldn't make an intelligent decision. I ask both you, is it better that that person doesn't vote then? Of course, we'd rather have them informed and then make that informed decision. But wouldn't you rather have somebody who doesn't take the time maybe not vote?
My quick comment is stay at home.
So you, okay.
Yes, what use is it going down the ballot list seeing, you know, names you like? Are there any Irish names? Are there any, you know?
Yeah. That's interesting. I never thought of that strategy. I gotta remember that.
I know some people who are men that only vote for women, and women who only vote for women, and men who only vote for men. There's a gender issue there. If you don't know anything about them, it's do you recognize that name? Not because you recognize the person, but you know that name from anywhere in your past in a favorable connection. You know, again, ethnic background. Who knows? It is.
But it's not a reason to vote for them.
No.
And so you're. It sounds like Amy agrees with me that you'd rather that person stay home anyway.
That person should stay at home and start educating them for the next go-around.
Okay.
Starting to replan their life on how to, you know, somehow watch local meetings of the school board and the city council on television. And they're repeated. They're not just live once a week or once every 2 weeks. They're repeated over and over again.
Over and over.
I hope people have cable TV just for that example. Some of them are boring as all get out, but then again, kind of a criticism of the people you elected, if it's
if you want to toss in Detroit City Council, you really want your meetings boring. You just want the the facts presented and issues presented and discussed, and not lively rounds and singing and
or invective, you know, and nasty slurs, and that's not constructive at all. I mean, it's hurtful, it's harmful, it's not part of the civilization. I thought we were in a civilization here. We're still trying. It's not a civilized way to work out problems and to come up with answers. If people are shouting, yelling, casting aspersions, you know, it's going to be very emotionally distracting, and it's not going to get to the core of the problem. Sensible participation, stay at home, if you know nothing, and then plan your life to be different for the next year. Make sure you're registered, And work for candidates. Work for people that discover candidates. Find out who these people are and what they stand for. And Dearborn Homecoming. Go up and talk to them when they're circulating once or twice a year for the Dearborn Farm Market that has now ended in the spring before the primary. There was a candidate or two out there walking around talking to people. Even last week, I saw Sharon Domage, who was unsuccessful bid for Dearborn City Council this year. But she was out there. She didn't have a sign on or a T-shirt, but she was there. And people, if they knew who she was, could have come up to her and talked to her, certainly. She was talking to a lot of people. So let's go down for those people who haven't read the paper or gone to the cityofdearborn.org website. You could also go to Press and Guide. .com. Their website has these numbers, and of course their next editions will include it. But the winners for, of course, Mayor in Dearborn, John B. O'Reilly Jr., with almost 88% of the vote. Michael Pruse received 12%, approximately, not quite. Okay, City Clerk, only one person there, incumbent Kathy Buda, reelected 99%. It's always amazing to me that even with only one person on the ballot, we still get 121 votes for somebody else. And I actually know why some of that happens. And it's interesting thing is that a democracy shouldn't be that way. There should always be competition. And so a lot of people, it's not just because they want to cause trouble, they actually put in their own names or anybody else's name that they think might do the job because they believe that democracy should not just have one choice. And I think that's true, too. It's unfortunate that other people, even if they don't think they're going to win, I give a lot of credit to Mr. Pruse. He only got 12%. He had a campaign. He had a platform. He allowed, and he said this too at the outset, he allowed there to be a debate when the mayor, our current mayor, had to defend and explain further why he's done what he's done. And at least for that purpose alone, it's good to have a second candidate in there.
Absolutely.
You know,
yep.
Let these people talk and you know, if you didn't know their record before, or even if you did, this would give you another reason either to support them or not. So thank you, Mr. Pruse, for being there, for doing that. Hope it didn't cost you too much money. But Kathleen Buda, she's had some real serious competition and criticism, in fact, before prior elections, and no one wanted to challenge her this time. The council in Dearborn, I'll just read last names, Tefelski, and in the order that they got the highest votes here, Tefelski, Sarini, Darani, Shushanian, Abraham, O'Donnell, which is the surprising challenger, who is now part of the new Dearborn City Council. I'm not sure when they take office, though. They have to wait till January or December. I think it's December sometime that there's a swearing in. Or swearing at.
Boy, I'd have to go by. I just heard that in Detroit there is. So if it runs in the same
Detroit is when?
Same vein. Detroit, December.
Okay.
I keep thinking that the mayor swearing in is like right after the 1st of January. So I'm not sure. Well, anyway, the new council-to-be, whenever they're in, it's another month or so before that Mr. O'Donnell joins the incumbents. But last in the list was Nancy Hubbard. For years, of course, because of the Hubbard name and traditions and because she's a known quantity, certainly in Dearborn, was up in the top two or three vote-getters. I don't think she was ever council president with it being the top vote-getter because, well, Mayor O'Reilly was the top vote-getter for many, many, many years there. I mean, when he was on the council. And Tefelski has that now. But she was only separated by 548 votes from being eighth.
Right.
So David Bozzi, a challenger who was supported by Mayor O'Reilly. O'Reilly in his campaign mailing and in emails he sent out, and I don't know how they got my email, but I was on that list. In fact, I think Serini and someone else from the council got my email address, and I'm not sure how I shared that with them, whether I told the city when I was, you know, paying my taxes, I gave him my email, I'm not sure.
I just gave it to everybody. Is that okay? I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
Sure.
That's the one you give out at Kroger when you get your card.
Well, I pretend it's mine.
Dennis has 10,000 friends on Facebook, too.
So. I wish.
Yeah.
Facebook.
It's personal networking. People from high school, or I just created a Facebook account for myself last year and just to explore it, just to see what happens. And
sure.
Unbelievable. Everybody that ever graduated from Wayne State University wants me as their friend now. And I was just there for 2 years.
Really?
I mean, and
you made quite an impression.
I don't know these people. I graduated, that's all.
Oh.
And
there's something else there, isn't there, Amy?
Well, I'm just saying on Facebook, it's like how many people you can connect with, even though you don't know them or never did.
Right.
But, you know, maybe a great lifelong. Well, anyway, David Bozzi, who was supported by Mayor O'Reilly, so O'Reilly also supported Sereny, Shushanian, Abraham, and Hubbard. Well, Hubbard just barely made it there, and Bozzi didn't make it in there. But Brian C. O'Donnell, who was interviewed here on the show just 2 or 3 weeks ago, did. And congratulations to him on his campaign. Now, I saw nothing from him as a mailing in East Dearborn. No signs with his name on it in East Dearborn. But I understand from some other people he had a lot of yard signs in West Dearborn.
Many, 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 many.
Okay. Yes. So that maybe that's what did it. Or, as the Colbert Report on Comedy Central says, maybe it was the Journal bump.
I have to put my faith in that.
But all of the challengers should have got the Journal bump, and only one of them got in. So Mayor O'Reilly got 4 out of 5. And you could say, well, his endorsements, he got, you know, well, he was endorsing all incumbents except for Bozzi. So, of course, most incumbents will get in there. The basic rule in politics across the U.S., as analyzed by political scientists after the fact, is that any challenger, on average, must spend at least twice as much money on advertising and self-promotion to get elected as somebody who's already an incumbent. Okay? And if they don't spend about twice as much on whether it's cable or billboards or direct mail or leaflets, they don't have a chance. I mean, that's on average. There are exceptions, but that's the simple fact, folks, is that money gets people elected. They say this about Mayor Bloomberg in New York City. $17 million, mostly of his own money, he spent. Never in the history of the world has anyone spent so much money, much less their own, on an election. But of course, but he just squeaked in.
He did just squeak in.
He just squeaked in. I mean, a couple percentages difference than the so-called Democrat. A lot of negative feeling because they changed the rules. He was previously term limited. He couldn't run again. And he was against term limits. Oh, he was for term limits years back. And then when it came time for him to give it up, he said, you know, the city council sort of started the idea, his friends on the city council, let's change the constitutions or the city chair so that the mayor, anybody can run again. And of course, I'm against term limits in general, so that's okay. But a lot of people felt that was kind of dirty pool. It looked very self-interest oriented for him to do that. And who knows, if he had to spend the same amount as his challenger, even though he was the incumbent, he might have not got in.
But he outspent
the challenger 2-1.
If I have enough confidence in myself and I'm running, I would think that if I believe in my heart that I'm the best option, I would try to change the term limit also. I mean, so I understand what you're saying, that it was at that point for him, it was, you know, maybe a selfish motive. But if he really felt he was the right leader, then sure, you go for it.
Tell me what leader doesn't feel like they're the right leader.
Well, then, and who would want a leader that doesn't? Yeah. You know, I mean,
once you get the reins of power.
The power. Oh, you're kidding. This microphone. Oh,
ooh,
yeah.
All those TV reporters constantly interviewing you and
drag me out of here each
hire time. And fire people right and left and get your way. Power corrupts. Absolute power. Absolutely, they say. Well, we're going to move on with other things here. I guess the only comments I would also make, Doug Thomas, incumbent, was the one that was not in the top 7. He, in fact, was 10th. So I don't know if he's going to go to Florida full-time now or not. He was not in the leaders of vote getters for the last couple of years anyway. Just sort of snuck in, I think, as number 7 last time. But we'll see what his future is like. Apparently people just didn't feel that he was one of their top choices. But very sad, George Hart. And I think it's sad because of his years of service, never got into trouble, never got proven corrupt, never got thrown in jail, never got a DUI. Anyway, George Hart, a former council member and senator from this area to the state of Michigan, came in last. So sorry, George. That's all we can say. I think we know you have heart, no pun intended, H-E-A-R-T, and you're a friendly guy, and you're very positive about Dearborn, and you want to do what you can, but just not your time. Just not enough, I don't know, maybe new ideas, George, I don't know. And even your, as you called him, as he called you, George Hart was my mentor, that O'Reilly quote that you used in your campaign material. The mayor didn't put you on his top five, didn't recommend you for election at this time. They must have heard a little bit too. But George, hope we see you around in places. Hope you'll still speak out on issues. We wish you well, of course, from the WHFR Journal. And you were one of those seven challengers that did come by. One of the people that didn't come for an interview came in second for last. And we don't even mention his name here, but he didn't get any sort of journal bump, if one is possible. Didn't get his message out for free via us. Dearborn Public Schools, Pamela Adams, incumbent reelected Hussein Berry. This is not his first time trying to get elected to the Dearborn Public Schools. Finally got in the second position. Pamela got 31% of the vote. Hussein got 26%. And Roxanne McDonald, who's a very newcomer, came in with 22%. Pretty close to Barry, in fact. John C. Corbin, who's run before, nice person, I've met him, came in with 20%. So it was actually pretty close. Pam Adams, incumbent, of course, incumbent bump always. She got 31%. But Hussein Berry, a lot of Berries in Dearborn, running for politics or not. Not all related, folks. But anyway, he's the new second person to get into the Dearborn, or the newest person to get into the Dearborn Public School Board of Ed. And Henry Ford Community College's Board of Trustees. Same people, two hats. Of course, Wayne County, collectively, in Dearborn, it passed by 74%, and it did pass, I think, Wayne County-wide. Does anybody know that? It could have gone down in Wayne County. It's not just Dearborn that would vote on that. Nobody pays attention to the city votes here. Henry Ford Community College, though, which is just Dearborn and parts of Dearborn Heights, 78% approval. Big success for both of those propositions, which are just renewals, folks, and proven necessary by several criteria. We do have the Dearborn Heights results, and we're going to cover those, but we have a special interview that I pre-recorded a couple days ago, and this is, you know, everybody's looking for a job, and it's pretty important here to understand that Henry Ford Community College is giving all kinds of informative information about where jobs are besides training people for jobs. But the first issue is, what kind of job do you want? What kind of job are you going to try to follow? And what's available? So there's a seminar coming up next Wednesday, and listen to this interview with that I did 2 days ago for the next couple of minutes, and hear about our special workshop that's going to be here on campus for free, and free food, as I emphasized in the interview over and over, free breakfast, free lunch.
He had me at jobs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. So here it goes, and we'll be back with more of the journal after this interview with Diane Green, who is the Associate Dean of our Counseling Department here and knows all about the seminar coming up. So take a listen. Don't tune out. We're speaking with Diane Green, who is the Associate Dean here at Henry Ford Community College for our Counseling Division. And, in fact, Diane, in your position, I understand you actually are in charge of several other areas for the college, too, other than our fine and extensive counseling program.
That is correct. I'm also over the assisted learning services area of the college, as well as student outreach and support, formerly known as Focus on Women, or FOW.
Keep changing those names. The assisted learning used to be called, too, for people that remember the last go-round of nomenclature, special needs.
That's correct.
Yeah. So, and you have other people that assist with each of those programs, but it's all under your responsibility.
It sure is.
Well, you're very busy. We thank you for being on WHFR Journal today to help spread the word of a great seminar that the college puts on here for free. And sorry, folks, food is always important to yours truly. Free lunches included, as well as some free door prizes. So if that is an incentive to get the homeless out, I'm sorry, to get the people who are here at the college already beginning their education but don't quite know what direction they're going to go to find what jobs there are. And there are jobs for people that are knowledgeable and properly directed, too. So this seminar, which is going to be on Wednesday, November 11th, 8 in the morning to 1 p.m. in the afternoon or so, right here at Henry Ford Community College is called Non-Traditional Careers for Women. And so please tell us about the nature of that and some of the details about what people who come by can experience on that day.
You know, Jay, I like to go back to the title of the seminar, Imagine the Possibilities. Mm. And what we're focusing on are those areas of work, those areas of education and study that are non-traditional to women, meaning those particular areas have an underrepresentation of women within the workforce. And we're featuring those programs as a way of helping individuals understand what the possibilities are within those particular areas.
And the areas, and I have the sort of the agenda in front of me, the schedule for the day, especially listed here and dealt with for half an hour at a time, computer information systems, criminal justice, manufacturing productivity systems, hospitality, architecture, construction, energy technology, industrial drafting, CAD, which is computer assisted design. Tell me a little bit more about how these are non-traditional for women. I guess, is it that old math anxiety thing that women don't easily choose, first of all, the computer information area?
Well, you know, I think with computer information systems, it's some of it may have a lot to do with the math piece that's associated with that and the technology that's associated also with the computer. But we're finding more and more women are seeing that as an area of interest and challenge and are pursuing that. If we move through that list and we look at criminal justice, when we look at law enforcement, the idea of a woman strapping on a gun and riding around in a police car was something that we just did not see 20, 30 years ago, but we're seeing more and more women demonstrating an interest in criminal justice, in law enforcement, in probation, parole. The manufacturing productivity systems, typically manufacturing was a male-dominated area. I think with the introduction of computers, numerical control, women became more interested in the programming aspects associated with the manufacturing. And then, of course, hospitality, when we think about the great chefs of the world, they typically are men. We're starting to see the emergence of women. I love looking at the cooking magazines and the competitions, and you start to see more and more women emerging as nationally recognized, world-renowned chefs. So this is an area you'd think with mom in the kitchen cooking that we would see more women in hospitality management, hospitality, culinary arts, but we don't. So we're starting to see some movement in that area as well.
I always like to interrupt with facetious comments here. Is there, I don't watch his show, but I know one of my colleagues does, and she's a woman. The Iron Chef program, whatever that is, some sort of competition among chefs. Is there a woman on that? Have you ever noticed?
Well,
have
you ever
watched that?
I've just in surfing have come across it, but have never really settled on it and watched it.
Okay. Well, we hope there's an Iron Woman chef in there somewhere, at least for equity. I know in criminal justice, at least my area of telecommunications, there's a couple of shows on television right now where they have strong female detectives in the taking
definitely.
The lead.
CSI.
Well, of course, CSI with Mari Helgenberger's character now moving to the forefront, as well as Castle, which is on Monday nights. I was going to say Bones, but she's only a forensic scientist. But still, she's the top forensic scientist.
Exactly.
And extremely smart, smarter than her FBI colleague, in fact.
I think a lot of good TV.
Well, there is some. There's not much. But I do think it's important to know what people are experiencing a great deal of, and I don't do video games, which I'm sure have a lot of bad stereotypes in them, but certainly television does try, at least for the sake of variety or gimmick or whatever, to introduce new combinations of occupations and gender roles, and sometimes it's quite exciting to see those new combinations interact and to see what's possible. And of course, they do set standards then if the show is successful and people watch. So so manufacturing productivity, I understand, is really a factory management thing and a design of the overall plan, sort of computer-based too. Well, we're sort of at the midday point in the agenda. I see that in the middle of this, and we'll talk about architecture, energy, tech in just a second, but we have our job placement services director, Chad Austin, who's going to give a presentation too. So is there places for women in placement services? No, that wasn't the point. there are, but...
Now, the point is twofold. First, that it gives us an opportunity to feature Chad. We're really excited about him joining the staff here at Henry Ford Community College. And I'm thrilled that he was also available and willing to come in and talk a little bit about the process of the job search, the strategies associated with looking at and assessing employability skills. And I think the other important piece too is, Jay, it'll give him an opportunity to share with the participants what his office does and how that office can help them in moving through their program and then finding employment. Mm-hmm. We do have a placement office that assists students in job placement.
I understand he's planning and implementing, since he just came to us last year, I believe, in this role, a whole number of specific workshops that people could take if they needed help with resume writing or interviewing techniques. And I'm sure he'll let them know what those other possibilities are for further enhancing their employability. Again, it's not just learning the content, but making the contact, how to search for the job, and then, of course, how to convince those people that you're the one
to
that's
be hired.
Right for the job.
Yeah. The neat thing is, on the 11th, he also has an event that is kind of dovetailing, and it will be offered later in the afternoon as well. So folks can attend that, and then perhaps go and visit with him.
We are talking about a special seminar here at Henry Ford Community College, our main campus, Evergreen Road, south of Ford Road in Dearborn, called Imagine the Possibilities, Non-Traditional Careers for Women. And it will be offered Wednesday, November the 11th from 8 o'clock in the morning. That's when registration and that continental breakfast is. There's also a free lunch,
free
folks.
Free continental breakfast.
Oh, my gosh. And, of course, we're talking with the person who's in charge of the counseling division, Associate Dean Diane Green. Just briefly, let's talk about the sessions after Chad Austin. Again, a half an hour each. Maybe I ask you a question here before we look at these last three. Why not do concurrent sessions? That is, why not spend let people choose an hour with each of these people, with just three of the people, let's say?
Well, what we find is that so many of the individuals coming in for the seminar are interested in getting as much information, oftentimes about all of the programs. Mm-hmm. We have in past years seen individuals come in wanting information on a specific area, but most often they want to visit the labs, see what's going on in each of the programs as they try to kind of hammer out what it is they think they want to do. So we've always done it this way to give them maximum flexibility should they want to experience all of the sessions.
Yeah, I mean, coming into it, first of all, it is a new awareness of career areas that they may not have considered fully before, and probably they might have heard of one or the other, but they don't know of the others at all. And they might discover, wow, that I had no idea. That
exactly.
was so interesting. So you're taking them through, and
it.
I think it's great, too, that you're mentioning that this is going to happen in our Patterson Technology Building, but you are going to move a couple of the presentations, move the group to other rooms where the labs are. Is that
exactly.
right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
The group for manufacturing will actually be able to go in and see some of that very expensive, beautiful equipment, and he normally does live demonstrations so people can actually see what these machines do and how they function.
Robots?
Yes.
Sort of robotic equipment? Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then they will also visit the energy tech labs. That's after Chad's presentation. They'll also have an opportunity to go into the industrial drafting labs to see what happens with that particular area of
study. For those people who don't know, energy technology is really the full range of energy technology, including what might be called alternative energy choices for the future,
mm-hmm.
that we're actually have begun a certificate and a degree program here at Henry Ford Community College in energy tech that includes these new energy sources that we're going to be so desperately in need of perfecting in the future, including solar and wind energy and geothermal and so on. So that is an area that's bound to be booming. It's going to be important to all of us, Michigan and around the world, to find something other than oil,
mm-hmm.
and maybe even
exactly.
other than nuclear eventually to keep us going. And yet people think maybe just of, you know, heating and cooling as working on those big boilers or something.
And
that certainly, dirty job sort of thing, may not be what women might consider, first of all, or even some men. But energy tech, wow, get out in the wind and the sun.
The whole issue is associated with conservation.
Yeah.
So, and we're seeing more women expressing an interest in the renewable energy area, in the alternative energy area. We're really focusing on green, and that is a strong attractor to people. So I'm looking forward to seeing a lot of the participants being eager to see what we're offering here.
We've got a great selection of speakers. I count 8-9 different sessions in this wonderful morning and early afternoon program, Wednesday, November the 11th, Non-Traditional Careers for Women, right here at Henry Ford Community College in our Patterson Tech Building. We've been talking to Diane Green for the last 10 minutes or so about this. Is this only for Henry Ford Community College current students, Diane?
No, it is not. It is open to the public.
Okay.
So individuals who might be considering returning to school, we are attracting numerous No Worker Left Behind candidates, TRA, TAA applicants. This gives individuals an opportunity to come in and firsthand get information on these programs. So yes, it is open to our campus community, but we certainly invite the larger community as well.
And I personally would suggest getting a reservation if you are thinking of coming, even if it's like Tuesday night when you're listening to the WHFR Journal on our podcast or something, Tuesday night, the November 10th, because this is just a wonderful morning, as I said, going into early afternoon. It's 5 hours, but there's one thing after the other. So much information, so many good career opportunities that women in particular hadn't considered. Let me just ask this too. Can some men show up too?
Well, we would never turn a guy away, but the emphasis is for women.
Now, don't you have another one for men?
We do. In the spring, we offer, we do Imagine the Possibilities, Non-Traditional Careers for Men in Health and Nursing. So that's our big program that we feature in the spring. We'll probably do that sometime in March or April. Last year, that was an amazing success. We had over 65, 66 individuals, men to come on campus and participate. So the spring one we'll be doing for the men.
Okay. But some significant other of a woman might want to come by and take notes for them, maybe, if they couldn't attend. But here's how to do the registration, folks, because I have the form in front of me. Brenda Buchanan, and her position is, by the way?
Brenda is the secretary over our Assisted Learning Services office, and she also assists with student outreach and success.
So she's right there at the phone, folks, or we'll get the voicemail, 313-845-9617. They welcome walk-ins. No problem. They got the room and they got the free food. Come on by. This is, again, Imagine the Possibilities, Non-Traditional Careers for Women. Don't close yourself off, folks, from a fantastic career. There's a lot of excitement, and a lot of careers are a lot different than what you might have been told a few years ago or what you might imagine or have imagined in the past. So this is a great mind-opening seminar. It's the fifth year for this, Diane, and you're to be much congratulated and commended on starting this up. We hope that everyone will consider these areas that maybe they hadn't considered before and find something that's just right for them. Also, I'll conclude by saying, folks, that these all relate in particular. There's other non-traditional careers for women, which Diane Green and the counseling department could talk to you about long term. I mean, in the long run, you might need a 4-year degree, and we could get you ready for some of those. But this particular seminar talks about programs that are 2 or 2.5 year intensive programs in these areas, might get you an entry-level job, might get you established. So it's all very pragmatic here and very directed at raising your awareness and choosing your future courses in a direction that's really going to be good for you and also, of course, for your future career. Well, anything else, Diane, I should mention?
Well, you know, before we sign off, I would definitely want to recognize my team. I don't do this alone. I've had a fabulous team of women who've worked with me, June Shopek, Deborah Glazer, and Jan Jameson, all licensed professional counselors through the counseling office, and they've worked with me on this every year. So this is a fifth anniversary for all of us, and we're very, very excited about that. But I guess the one thing that I also want to point out is we also have a keynote speaker, Viola Lydell, and Viola is completing courses to start our nursing program in the fall. Now, nursing is not a non-traditional career area for women. But what she's going to bring to the podium is just a wealth of experience she's had throughout her life in areas that in fact are and have been non-traditional. So we're looking for some great information and some great sharing from her about her personal experience in pursuing her career.
Well, the whole seminar looks extremely exciting, and I do highly recommend everyone to consider this if you're at all open to exploring, or you really don't have an idea where your college career, if you're just beginning your college career or going to come back to college looking for a new job, because a lot of these areas are different than you might think, and they're very exciting new areas, in fact, because of new technology and new approaches to technology. This is the Imagine the Possibilities, Non-Traditional Careers for Women. It is next Wednesday, November 11th, starting at 8 a.m. in the morning here at HFCC campus, Patterson Tech Building, and ends a little bit after 1 o'clock in the afternoon. Again, for information registration, which I recommend, Brenda Buchanan, 313-845-9617. That's also B. Buchanan, the number 1, at hfcc.edu, but Buchanan, now I've got to spell it. So it's B for Brenda, and then Buchanan immediately following B-U-C-H-A-N-A-N-1, the number 1. Thank you, Diane Green, so much for being with us, and keep up the good work over at the HFCC Counseling Office.
Thank you for having me.
And we're back live here at WHFR Journal, the new WHFR Journal for Friday, November the 6th, 2009. So we hope that was plenty of information about the non-traditional career workshop for women that is going to happen next Wednesday morning. Free food, remember, and maybe a chance to get a new direction for employment. Okay, where were we with our election special roundup where we can sound so intelligent about who won, even though we didn't know. First of all, the Press and Guide, I want to commend them because last Sunday, November 1st, and this is the reason to read their Sunday edition, folks. Usually it's a Wednesday edition that is the big time deal, and Sunday is just sort of, human interest, I'd call it fluff, but not in this case. This is where they told you who they recommend, and they went very specific in terms of what they thought the best people would be. They supported O'Reilly. They supported, interestingly, and I won't go over everything, but they supported, for the Dearborn City Council, David Bozzi, Sharon Domage, and Brian C. O'Donnell in terms of the incumbents, in addition to incumbents Abraham, Durrani, Serini, Shushanian, and Tefelsky. Interestingly, they didn't recommend Doug Thomas or Nancy Hubbard. And of course, Thomas didn't get in the top seven. Hubbard came in last. So maybe the Hubbard influence in Dearborn is in decline here. Even the paper didn't recommend Nancy Hubbard this time around. And Brian C. O'Donnell got their endorsement. He made it, although not Bazzie and Dommage. Okay. Quel dommage. That's a French joke. It means, I'm so sorry. And her name is Dommage. I'll just spell differently, I think. But anyway. They were for the money proposals, and I'm told, because we weren't sure before, but Dennis dug the facts up here, that Wayne County millage renewal did pass by 71% in Wayne County, so good for Wayne County. We think that was essential, even though the press and guide said, we suggest a qualified yes on this question. How can you vote a qualified yes? It's either yes or no, folks, mm-hmm. But okay. But they thought it probably should deserve to be voted in favor of. I guess that's the way you'd have to put it. All right. So in Dearborn Heights, they recommended, and Dennis can tell us now how it really worked out, they recommended Jim Lynch, a challenger. They really want to see Jim Lynch there. And he's quoted in this other story about Mayor Politko that you can do next after the who won. But I think it was just, wasn't it, just the incumbents, Battalo, Barry, Horvath, and Van Houten to steal your thunder. Right, Dennis?
That's right. That's right. That's exactly right. And Mr. Lynch was just out of the running, just out.
Mm-hmm.
But that was for city council. Well, you were talking about the quote from Mr. Lynch. It had to do with the mayor responding to a lawsuit. Mm-hmm. Shall we get through the rest of the election first?
Whatever else you want to cover about Dearborn Heights there, I assume was their mayor up this time again? Politko for another?
Yes, but unopposed.
Oh, okay. So he won.
So
yes.
He did win.
Uh-huh. And their city clerk, I think, Judy Dudzinski?
Yes.
Got in?
Yes. Boy, you got...
That's an incumbent.
Yeah, but she was opposed and she did win.
Right.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And we had the treasurer. They also had a vote for the treasurer who was also unopposed.
They have any proposals on their ballot for millages or anything like that? No?
No.
Okay.
No, they did not.
So there it was. Incumbents got in again, folks. Even though a highly recommended and supported challenger, I bet he didn't spend twice as much as any of the incumbents.
No.
You know, just to go back to that formula.
Actually, there were two proposals, but they were the same we had in Dearborn, a proposition on the Henry Ford.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
That's it.
And what about there was a discrimination suit that's been filed now against Mayor Politko?
Well, we knew about the suit. We've talked about that, I won't say extensively, but definitely in detail. And now in the press and guide from this past week, we have, and this is the headline, the mayor responds to the lawsuit. And he said things predictably like these attacks are politically motivated, they are wrong and malicious, end of quote. What I thought was interesting, and this is really what I took from the entire article, was Jim Lynch, the Military Park Neighborhood Association president, said residents shouldn't pay attention to hearsay. Instead, residents should wait for the matter to be decided in court.
Exactly. These things get kind of complicated. There's many factors and issues. Initially hearing the discrimination, some of the details of the suit, it sounded like sour grapes. This guy didn't get the job or couldn't continue, and maybe he can get back because of, you know, and the details of discrimination are kind of complex sometimes, and it takes a court, supposedly rational, looking at it in detail,
objective,
over a period of
sure.
time, objective, to really work that out. You should never jump to conclusions, or as they sometimes say, jump to contusions, with incomplete information. And so it should not be any negative thing that's thought by the Dearborn Heights residents about Mayor Politko yet, not until it's resolved. And since he was unopposed, it couldn't have affected the election. That wasn't that issue. Although the Doug Thomas question about whether or not he was a resident was raised by somebody who didn't get in the top 14 of the primary. And so that certainly sounded like this person missed by two. But it sounded like sort of sour grapes to attack Thomas in this way at this time. Of course, that's irrelevant now since he's not going to be on the next council anyway. I mean, it doesn't matter. Even if he did on purpose register or ask for a special tax, primary residence identification in two states at the same time, even if he did do that, it doesn't mean anything now. Okay, so we're moving on from Dearborn Heights. That's the election locally, and I'm sure that both papers, Dearborn Times-Herald and the Press and Guide, will cover that in a similar way, probably. I bet with similar conclusions about why in upcoming moments. We have about only 6 minutes to go. Apparently, our representative Gino Polidori in Lansing, in addition to the budget crisis mess, Tim Skupik reports in the Sunday Press and Guide that he was one of the prime movers in trying to get a little law passed outlawing text messaging while driving, which 18 other states have already done. Of course, it makes sense to me. You shouldn't be so distracted. But it was undercut. It was watered down. It was changed so as to be a secondary offense, as to be minimal fines, as to be... And just an example, he was told that politically, you can't make it happen, okay? You can't do anything definitive, positive, without qualification in politics. And that's why I think we're in the healthcare mess too that we're in, is because you can't just go for the straightest, simplest, most easily understood, most easily applied, and the best answer, which yours truly has said in the past. And remember, on this show, all the opinions expressed here are not necessarily those of Henry Ford Community College. Anyone works here or even goes to school here, although I hope so. A couple people might think the way we do. But universal single payer. And what is that all about? That's about Dennis Kucinich. And he's the Democrat from Ohio, congressman from Ohio, and Congressman John O'Conyers, who is John O'Conyers. John Conyers, Democrat of Michigan, does represent like the eastern third of Dearborn and the Detroit area to Congress in Washington, D.C. His bill is, their bill is H.R. 676. It is for universal, single-payer, everybody in, nobody out health care. And don't give me that socialism is evil thing. Only tyrants are bad. Democratic socialism has happened in this country since 1930s, and most everybody talking about Social Security and Medicare and the other democratic socialist programs love them and want to keep them, okay? So don't tell me that socialism is bad. It is not per se bad at all. Where does Fox come off like that? In fact, Hitler wasn't a socialist. He was a fascist, so there, Glenn Beck. Take that and chew on it. And you might say there's no difference. There is a difference. Socialism is not inherently bad. France has it. Sweden has it. Germany almost has it completely. And their healthcare, France's healthcare system is first and best in the world by any criteria you want to give them. Okay? And it's a socialist system. And we should have it too. We shouldn't be totally socialist, but we don't have to be. Just the stuff that needs to be socialist can be socialist, and we can still regulate it. And we can, I mean, this stuff has been proven, folks, that that's the best way to go. And so we thank John Conyers for being there and Dennis Kucinich. And the reason I mention it today on November 6th is because the House bill, which is not currently the one they're going to vote on tomorrow, November 7th, in Washington, D.C., in the House of Representatives, is not universal single payer. But it's something, okay? It's something kind of in the direction of better government regulations and better criteria for getting and keeping health care. It's in that direction. Now, some people, they want the whole enchilada now. Simple, more direct, but as Gino Polidori found out in Lansing, you can't have the best answer, the simple answer. Our system doesn't work that way. I guess God bless democracy or the bureaucracy of our politics. It's almost that sort of thing. Amy said something there.
Special interest. God bless special interest.
Well, that's it, too.
That's what's making it 1,900 pages.
That's right.
Yeah, no kidding.
By the way, that's curious, too. Again, I do watch the John Stewart's Daily Show on Comedy Central. Even our legislators don't know how many pages or how heavy the document is. Sure. Or, I mean, it varied wildly. Like, the document, when piled up, one person said it was 9 pounds, and some other House of Representatives person, a Republican, said it weighed 70 pounds.
Well, what's unfortunate is it doesn't seem like anyone has read it completely.
Right.
So should a bill be passed that hasn't been read? No. let's get back to the drawing board.
Right.
And what I find interesting as well is Republicans who never made health care an issue are suddenly saying, yes, there are definitely issues in here we need to address, but this is the only time they've brought it up.
We're going to conclude with Jim Hightower today and his comment about health care and certain Republicans. You know, Hightower's a progressive that he thinks have been holding us back. But before we do that, and before the blues show of Highway 61 with Joanne Korchinska starts up, I wanted to mention that not only the Dearborn PTA, PTSA, which is
Parent Teacher Student Association,
they a number of them will be traveling to Lansing next Tuesday, November 10th, which is the same day that Dennis and Lindsay have our next edition of HFCC Campus Connection show from 1
not
to 2 p.m. Not coincidentally at all. That's scheduled now for the second Tuesday each month from 1 to 2, and you can catch that on a podcast from our website, whfr.fm, anytime after Tuesday. But Jennifer not Garing, and she really is Garing. She's not Garing. It's K-N-O-T-T. Bad joke. Jennifer Not Garing of the Dearborn Chamber of Commerce. The Chamber endorses that visit to reestablish funding to the level from last year for the Dearborn Public Schools, if that can be done. And you don't have to go up there, though. If you can't make it on Lansing with the Dearborn PTA, PTSA, you can simply sign that informal petition. It's informal, folks, so nobody's going to hate you in the morning for signing this, but you have to go to the Dearborn Chamber of Commerce office, normal business hours, by Monday at noon to sign your name to the informal petition. We highly recommend that you do that. It's not right to undercut our students, to lose any money, to make their education worse. I don't care what the reason for it was or how bad the economy is in Lansing. It's not fair to our kids to cut the budget. For any reason, with Dearborn or anywhere else, in
especially
terms
political.
Of education, yeah. And so go to the Dearborn Chamber of Commerce office, Michigan Avenue, first floor of the Bryant Public Library, their new location.